Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. Been doing business for well over two decades. Seen a lot of things, I guess. Not as much as some of the guys in the business. I was reading some stuff today on a certified dealer network, or it's called Certified Coin Exchange. It's a secured dealer network, and I was reading some stuff from a gentleman I respect and like and know, who said he's been doing this for 55 years since he was 17. That makes him 72. Interesting perspective on what's going on out there from him. He's seeing a lot in this industry, and he's feeling that we are being a little bit of chain yanked. One thing that's going on our secure dealer networks, you're going to find this shocking, but it's a network for trading material, products, posting bids and asks from, 6,000-7,000 dealers globally, primarily United States, but all over the globe. And a lot of the United States dealers operate internationally. But now all of a sudden we're getting political on there, which is kind of fun. It's really interesting. The number of guys, what's really going on is we have these guys. There's one guy on there who every day he puts on messages, plural, and they always start with the word Trump. Trump's doing this. Trump did that. Trump, but it's in a positive way. He's basically trying to do a blow-by-blow to say it's basically, supporting the president of the United States, propping him up. Well, that makes a lot of these East Coasters ticked off. And what's really astounding to me is whether it be jewelry, coins, or whatever, when you get to the East Coast, you get quite a few Jews. Why, my friends? Why in the world? I know all the hypothetical theories, but why would Jews be liberal? I mean, look at what they're doing. They're trying to impose socialism on us. And I spoke to another friend of mine today who's a very respectable, very, very respectable business professional at a much, much higher level than I'd ever dream of being. And he's a liberal. He says to me, Kevin, if there's one thing you and I can agree on 100%, he goes, it's that this thing has been overblown. So he and I traded statistics and numbers and discussed all that. And I'm telling you, folks, this is interesting. What's going on is you're seeing a fatigue now in the general populace. You're getting objections. You're getting protests. You're getting a lot of people that are just saying enough is enough. Now, that's the outward appearance that we see. But what the media doesn't give us is the inward. And what I mean by that is they don't give us the opposing argument. All we know is, these crazy people are protesting, These crazy people, they want everybody to die, I mean, it's kind of the approach they're taking. No, it's really interesting, and I'm going to look for a little article that might kind of surprise you here. Let me see if I can find this. I want to find it. I think it's relevant. It's a good springboard. And I communicated with him about it. Yeah, here we go. This is from a guy you've probably never heard of. It's a post that he put on Facebook. You've probably never heard of this guy. His name's Matt Shea. And he's a state representative for Washington. And I really like what he wrote, and I want to key off on it because I think there's some really good information here. And I just discovered I was wearing two pairs of glasses, so that's when you know something's wrong. Matt says, April 24th, 1 p.m., the protest is on Facebook. The protests are working. The governor's backtracking on his illegal actions. The governor did a 180 on residential construction last night. Our civil obedience, keyword, is working. And he says, yes, contrary to the fake news, we are advocating obedience to the supreme law of the land. And then he's got a couple, hashtag civil obedience, hashtag freedom is the cure. He says, a few thoughts regarding the situation. First, this situation is real. Equally as real as that COVID-19 is a low risk to the vast majority of people. And then he mentions the U.S. study, a New York study, and he says, et cetera. And I've keyed off of a few of these studies. I've keyed off of the Santa Clara or the Stanford study out of Santa Clara. And the USC study is a more recent study in L.A. They're coming up with statistics out of New York. I've also got wind from a very good friend, who him and his wife are both, you know, in very significant government positions. And they and some other people we know and other people I've discussed, I've just had some conversation. About last October, November, a lot of people got this lingering nasty cold. Deep dry coughs, all this stuff wouldn't go away, lingered way too long. Wasn't testing positive for flu, for influenza. One of them went in here recently and was tested. They're totally healthy. They have the COVID-19 antibody, okay? So all of a sudden, in my mind, this narrative changes. Maybe it was November that she got it. And then another friend of mine, about the same time. The narrative changes. This thing was planted in the U.S. in November, maybe. Spread through the perfect environment. Public schools is one of them. Public office is another. Government officials. I mean, folks, it is so easy to walk into any public office or public official and hand them a piece of paper that you've touched or whatever. You know, I don't even want to imagine how many different ways you could spread stuff. And start the spread of this disease. The thing is, folks, when I talk about it this way, it sounds like a real, you know, viral pandemic. It's going to kill everybody. But it was all part of the ultimate, probably the greatest, as far as I can understand, the greatest feat of propaganda ever committed on U.S. soil post-FDR. FDR pulled some stunts you wouldn't even believe. Why did everybody hole up? Why did everybody comply with this? Dual. One, patriotism, citizenship, peer pressure. The vast majority, when I was reading an article this weekend, thrashing on very solid scientific studies showing that the infection mortality rate is drastically, drastically lower than ever imagined, 0.1%, lower than influenza, showing that the actual infection rate is 55 to 85 times what we suspected. Folks, this has popped up in three cases, three studies, including New York. Now when they're out doing, and you know, and then people start to argue the statistics. And I'm like, it just makes me sick. It's because that is my whole educational background. And people think, oh, statistics, you know, you take a poll and you divide by that. No, it gets so complicated, but yet so accurate. There is even a statistics of randomness that can predict randomness. I mean, it is, when you get into mathematics, the universe is designed by God, and they say that the mathematics is the language of God, okay? Some people are like, oh, I'm good at math. I can add 10 and 10. No, it gets so complicated, it's crazy. You get to the pyramids on Mars and things like this, And, you know, the spacing between them is the secant over the cotangent, and then the cotangent over the cosecant. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense. Well, yeah, it does. It's actually a logarithmic equation, but it's very advanced. So when you get into statistics, into the way things happen, God set up a rhyme and a reason. Can we figure it all out? Heck no. Even if we do, it doesn't matter because we can't make life. We can take it away, but we can't give it. And so we still don't have any authority. But the bottom line is we're seeing, you know, when we start to see the layout through very advanced, amazing statistical calculations, and believe me, it is the most complicated thing to learn, but once you start to learn it and understand it, it makes sense. Bottom line is this. It's not flawed science when it's coming out, you know, from 26 researchers out of Stanford. And then, you know, they're being accused of being everything evil under the sun. I mean, these are flaming liberals. They're just scientists. They're looking at the empirical data and they're spewing it out. This is what scientists are supposed to do. Then they're under personal attack. One of them that headed up the study had to move his family because of he has death threats now from Stanford. The lead guy, I'm not even going to say his name because I don't want to be part of the problem. He had to move his family because all these flaming left-wingers are freaking out on him saying, what are you doing to our cause? You're a hypocrite. We'll kill you. Really? Because you're a scientist? And then they're saying, you owe the world an apology because it's bad math. And then you go on these blogs on stat.com and you have guys that are like, hi, my name's Matt Smith. I am a mathematician. Okay, that's it. And then here comes the vitriol. Blah, 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 blah. Nothing said. I read one of the longest, ugliest articles against it all. I thought, and the caption was, you know, scientists, respected mathematicians, demolish Stanford study and all these studies. So I read the thing and I read on and on and on and on and on. And the first few paragraphs just absolutely, you know, belittle and demean and tear down and spew vitriol towards the principles of the study. And then the rest of the article just rambles and it goes on and on and on and on and on. And as usual, I see this so much, it's hype. It's absolute emotion. Interestingly enough, today, someone who's fairly close to me, who's on the other side of the fence, sends me this article. They don't even read it. They just read the headline. And I'm like, really? So I responded briefly. I mean, folks, it's just the headline. You know, we as humans are headline readers. You know, years back, USA Today hit the top of the top as newspapers. You want to know why? Because they began to write all their articles at the fourth and fifth grade level, and none of them were longer than a few paragraphs, taking the average person 2 to 3 minutes to read. And they said, because that is their maximum now. That is the new norm in America for the standard maxim on attention span. And our literacy rate has gone down so far. We're not even taught how to think. Think about that. I've said it over and over. You've heard it over and over, all over the place. There's a difference between what to think and how to think. Socialists teach you what to think. The left teaches you what to think. The right teaches you how to think. God wants you to know how to think because you've got to find your own way in this world. That's what our founders were all about. They were about developing a safe space, a refuge. They knew it'd be rough. They knew there'd be harsh debate. They knew there'd be discomfort. And Jefferson thought there'd be a physical revolution every 25 years. Can you imagine designing and developing a country that you believe is going to have a blood-shedding revolt every 25 years? That's because they know freedom, which comes from God, is not free. It's a God, you know, basically we're created by God with a set of talents and parameters, and we have the ability to create and grow. And we have a system that compresses us and pushes us in a little box. And it's getting worse. We go to school, and who are the good students? Those are those little boys and girls that can sit in the desk for 8 hours a day and never open their mouth and just absorb information like a sponge and regurgitate it out on tests. Those are the good little boys and girls. Is that the way God made us? It's not an adaptive system at all. I mean, our system's not designed for this. When you think we really did develop our school systems to teach us how to think. How to think. God says in his word, reason with me. Think of that. The God of the universe, who created you in your mind, says, reason with me. Let's reason together is another one. He wants us to think because we are accountable for that. If we shut that off and we don't use it, and, you know, people I know that come up in traumatic environments in their lives, they end up with entire portions of their brain and memory that they learn to psychologically circumvent, and then all of a sudden they can't be logical and everything becomes impulsive. All this happens. I don't know how God judges it. I know that you ruin a child, you're going to pay a big price. God's word's pretty clear on how we raise and treat, and, you know, and I was talking with someone yesterday about the absolute impressionability of children. It's absolutely crazy. You look at like Islam and things like this. They create monsters. That's why, you know, we're accountable for the children we raise. We can lead them to God and Christ and truth and righteousness. But once they get that, what the Jews call the age of accountability, we don't count you as an adult until you're 18. They have like bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvah, which is for those who are coming into the age of accountability. A lot more responsibility. It by, you know, in America, we'd probably call it a little bit post-puberty. It's kind of like a year or two after puberty. They figure that, you know, those hormones kick in, you become a more of an adult. Maybe you've had time to kind of learn to control the hormones. Maybe they're stabilizing. I mean, all this is hypothetical, but, you know, this is what it's all about, and they hold you accountable. They literally look at people that commit a crime, and they say, are they of the age of accountability? And then they, if so, they're tried as adults. You know, and in our nation, we've got this magic line of 18 years old. We don't even realize other nations, you know, we're like, oh, when we fight these Afghani warriors, they've got their children fighting. Well, they don't see it that way. They see young men. I mean, they just see them as they see them. I think throughout history, that's the way things probably have been. We have a lot of child protection laws. Some are great, some are not. A lot of them are based off of child labor laws, which ultimately came about during the Industrial Revolution because, you know, yes, there were some terrible factory owners, and then we all know about the unions and the unions getting together and, you know, and I mean, you can go through all that, the Karl Marx era and the Engels era and all these things that, you know, bad things were happening, especially around the world. Factory owners were terrible to their employees. The labor laws didn't exist. They were bad. They were working children to the bone. Interesting with Karl Marx in his 10 planks of communism. This, you know, you think about this, it doesn't really make sense at first. But Karl Marx says one of those planks of communism is that you have labor laws to protect children, okay? But that is synonymous with another very important one. It's called state-run education. They've got I'm trying to look this up here real quick. So they've got, like, number 10. Yeah, here we go. Number 10. 10 Planks of Communism. Interesting he put this last. Why would that be? Because that's the final nail in the coffin. It's called Free Education for All Children in Government Schools. Okay? Free education sounds great. For all children sounds great. Now, though, we are imposing our education system on children. And you remember in states of California, like California, they said parents could no longer homeschool unless they went out and got a teaching degree. They literally stripped that right away from all these Christian conservative parents. Do you know right now, one of the reasons that the liberals are begging for schools to be reopened, which, by the way, they are being reopened, and they're finding the kids are not going to go back, is because they're finding out these children are learning so much faster and so much better and performing at such a higher level working from home, with a few exceptions. I mean, I know some people that are sadly, you know, not doing a good job, really a terrible job. I've seen some of the grades and stuff. But in general, the overall, the 85 percentile is seeing a rise in grades, a rise in performance. But most importantly, they're seeing a reduction in education hours. My son's educating four of his children a couple hours a day. They're doing terrific. This is a threat to this 10th plank of communism. Free education for all children in government schools, okay? That's why they fight like heck against charter schools, against vouchers. You know what the voucher system is? Some people don't get that. The voucher system means you pay taxes for an education system, and they say, okay, you pay taxes, but we tell you where to go, when to go, how to go, blah, blah, blah. There's people in some really terrible school districts because the parts of town are really bad or whatever. And they're like, you know what? The government has given up on this school system because they know it's filled with failure. Sorry to use the word when in relevance to kids, but it's what's the truth, okay? So they know. And yet the government won't say, we need to break this cycle. Isn't it interesting that all these conservative principles always seem to work? You know, I was just reading a thing the other day on the show where it said, I don't remember who wrote it, someone profound, Cloward and Piven. They said that through excessive taxation, it will bankrupt the nation. And I was like, wait a minute. I thought, if you go back up here to the 10 planks of communism, number 2, a heavy, progressive, or graduated income tax. That's where that idea came from. And then, you know, we get the 16th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution in 1913, commensurate with the implementation of the Federal Reserve Act, which, you know, debatably, that this amendment, the 16th Amendment, was never properly ratified. They pushed through the Federal Reserve Act in 1913. They proposed the 16th Amendment. They attached it to it. It was never properly ratified. It did not go through the proper two-thirds. You have to have two-thirds of the Senate in full attendance, two-thirds of the Congress or House, two-thirds of the people in an election to add. There is a number of amendments. Folks, I'll finish this, but listen. Pelosi, her whole thing with vote by proxy, give me a break. Evil, evil, evil. Because she wants no one to have accountability. Okay, so we've got this improperly ratified 16th Amendment to implement the heavy progressive or graduated income tax. FDR later implemented the Social Security tax. That's when you pay Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid out of your paycheck every single time, 7.65% on your half. The employer pays 7.65%. Now you're talking 15.3% of every penny you ever earn forever. And then you think about what you receive from Social Security, and it doesn't make any sense. You know, if you made an average, say, of, let's just say, $50,000 a year for, 40 years of work, that's $2 million. So you've paid in $306,000. Of course, we're not talking the amortized accumulative value of money, which is, if I figure that out, if you're making $50,000 average a year, 0.153 times, you're paying $7,650 a year into Social Security. If you do that over 40 years, even though you've had $306,000 removed from your paycheck, even if you figure inflation at 2% over 40 years, your money should be worth close to, it'd be about $985,000. So now you go into retirement. You've been making $40,000 a year, $50,000, I think I said, $50,000 a year. So now you're 65 is the number I used, maybe earlier, but just say 65. Say you lived till 85. And you got time value of money again. The payout, not counting the increase in inflation and cost of living adjustments, should be $50,000 a year with an increase of 2% a year and all that other stuff. I mean, you should be getting $50,000 to $65,000 a year in Social Security income till you're 85, even though the average lifespan is 75. You know, and you go through it, and I could break that down. It's crazy. You go back to the average lifespan, and it's through the roof. It's 100 and some thousand a year that you should be paid back. It's craziness. It's absolutely excessive. That money is going somewhere else. Oh, wait a minute. It went somewhere else. There is $0 and 0 cents in the Social Security Administration. What? Yes. Every penny has been absconded and spent by Congress. Our politicians have drained us dry. Can you imagine if they accumulated that money up, what we'd have? And can you imagine if we had any fiscal responsibility? So what is the purpose of the graduated income tax? You know, I mean, constitutionally provided for a national sales tax, excise tax, import tax. You know, countries like Sweden, people always love to use Sweden as our example. Sweden has this thing about being equal. Unless you pay off the right people, then you can be unequally rich. But if you go to Sweden, they're generally fairly wealthy. They're living pretty good. And then we get the Al Gores, and I've heard all this, you know, oh, we need to be like Sweden. Well, Sweden's population doesn't even measure up to one of our major cities, number one. Number two, where does Sweden get all this money? Nobody even knows. Sweden sells natural resources. Those natural resources go into a public pool. From the public pool, they are dispersed. Okay? What does that mean? That means that you literally, so their definition of equal is above America. They're the highest per capita average living, blah, blah, blah. Housing, very nice. Okay? Cars, you get money for a car. You get a job, sort of. You get free education, like Bernie wants. But it's a little bit different. You've got to participate and apply that education back to the government. You owe them. You can leave the country with dual citizenship, but you have an obligation to the government. A certain amount of work over a certain amount of time. You can leave and not come back, but if you ever want to come back after you've breached your agreement, you can't come back. You know, that makes sense in a way. I'm not saying their system's good at all. We could never do it. Because over there, they've got some of the highest levels of ingenuity and innovation and creation. It's amazing. Why? Frankly, because they have responsibility, obligation, education. They get funded, but they've got a responsibility to go with it. Think about it. It's no different than having a job. Only there, it's imposed. You don't have the option to say, oh, my employer was mean to me. Over there, you have to obey. And so they owe. And then you get things like architects. You know, the government pays for their education. They owe the government a certain amount of work, which is great. But then at the same time, they have more freedom and to be creative. And then they start. And the, you know, the general Swedish architecture, I'm into architecture. It's not my style. But the point is, that's where you get innovation. Because even though they're getting government handouts, they have a physical obligation to pay them back through blood, sweat, and tears. It's just a backward system of capitalism, but it includes God's man-given creation and workability, talents, okay? So we talk about this heavy progressive income tax, 1913, Amendment 16. Various state income taxes have gone crazy. It established the major Marxist coup in the United States many decades ago. And these taxes continue to drain the lifeblood out of the American economy. And they greatly reduce the accumulation of desperately needed capital for future growth, for business, for job, you know, company startups, for job creation, salary increases, and all that. The graduated income tax is why we have an artificial consumer price index. The consumer price index really was modified. Big changes in the 70s. Reagan made some changes. The big wipeout was Bill Clinton. Imagine that. He literally removed food, transportation, real estate, and energy costs from the consumer price index, which is the indicator of hypothetical indicator, I should say, of what true inflation is. No matter what's going on. Okay, you got to think. Why did Clinton change it? We went through, if you're familiar with the late 80s, we had a massive inflationary run. They couldn't doctor the numbers. I got into the mortgage and banking business in the early 90s. Rates were astronomical. I mean, 16% on a home equity loan was reasonable. 14 was a good deal. 12 was a steal. I remember when mortgages broke below 10. My wife and I refinanced our house at 9.75%, and I thought I was shooting ducks in a barrel. I was like, this is like free money. Well, now we're down to 3.25 or whatever it is, and 3.75 depending on the mortgage type. And people are like, well, you know, I just, if the rates get down to 2.5, I might buy. Well, the problem when rates go down, the price of property goes up. Because the Federal Reserve in 1913 turned us to a payment-oriented economy. Once you get there, that's why we're heading towards what they call zero interest, because you have no choice. The term, you all know, inflation and deflation. Inflation is an increase in the money supply. A symptom is an increase in the cost of goods. Deflation is hypothetically a reduction in the money supply. We haven't seen many deflationary periods. One of the great deflationary periods was the crash of 29. The Fed retracted enormous amounts of money to intentionally crash the system so they could control and confiscate. But then there's a thing called stagflation. That's where the cost of goods is going down while the buying power of money is going up. And we've seen this a few times. And it's, or the, I got that backwards. The spending power of the dollar is reducing while the cost of goods is going up. I got it backwards. My apologies. The cost of goods is increasing while the buying power of the dollar is decreasing. This is where we've been now for over a decade. Things like this COVID virus, this is a wipeout on the middle class, an absolute wipeout. We have not even begun to see this. They want to implement socialism at a level and a rate you can't even imagine. This is a dream. This is why they're going crazy to say, yes, this disease is so horrible. And why would these scientists, when they see these things come out that say, three major metropolitan studies that are like, wait a minute, our sample group is showing 55 to 85 times the prevalence of COVID-19, which is dropping. And I mean, we're adding, you know, we're applying standard deviations to each level. But even with, you know, worst case scenario, in other words, best case, in other words, not looking optimistically, but trying to think of the worst, we're still down to 0.1% infection mortality rate, IMR. This is the truth, folks. I have employees whose wives won't let them come back. I have friends whose wives won't let them come back, you know, to work. I have, you know, people are freaking out. It's a fantasy. It's an absolute fantasy. You want to keep sticking to the fantasy? Keep watching fake news, CNN. Fake news, everything. The left has got a drastic, hardcore hold on media and propaganda, which is a socialist program. It's like a socialist mandate. Propaganda. And man, have they perfected it, haven't they? They've got it down to an absolute T. So where does this end? So we'll go back to Mr. Matt Shea. He says, a few thoughts regarding the situation. First, the situation's real. I mentioned that. Equally as real is that COVID-19 is a low risk to the vast majority of people. It's the burden of a government, and he goes through the studies that I discussed. It is the burden of government to prove the reasons for restricting constitutionally protected rights. Think about that. If government does not prove that, then it's acting illegally, since the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So the governor's power is not unlimited like they're acting. Under the 14th Amendment, the governor has to show a compelling governmental interest with actions that are narrowly tailored to address the so-called danger. Put another way, the governor must always use the least burdensome measures to achieve public safety. Not overkill. Not, you know, quarantine lockdowns. Just in case. The actions of a governor or any person under the Constitution in a position of authority cannot be arbitrary or capricious. So there's dozens of Supreme Court cases on this stuff. Attorney General Barr gave a similar assessment last week. I remember him, you know, he came right out and said, this is ridiculous, it's capricious, it's arbitrary, and he came out, he uses those exact words. Arbitrary is defined as not supported by fair, solid, and substantial cause and without reason given. Capricious, that's a word a lot of people probably don't know, but you'll hear it a lot in politics, talking about authoritative leadership. The definition of capricious is given to sudden and unaccountable changes of mood or behavior, okay? It's a matter of preference or vengeance. It's like, so in Michigan, the governor says she will extend the stay-at-home order for 8 more days if protests continue. So for her to make that statement and any action pursuant to it is automatically unconstitutional because it's the very definition of capricious. It's an emotional reaction of subjectivity. In this case, political opposition. The arrogance that this lady, I can't remember her name, it starts with a W something, but the capriciousness of her behavior, the arrogance, the ignorance, I don't know what to call it, pomposity, and also just kind of the lackadaisical, that's not quite the word, but she just doesn't seem to care. She's just got this really fruity, I'm a power hound. You know, where do these people get elected? Years ago, I was very involved with politicians at really, you know, I had a lot of really interesting experiences. I met, you know, and spent a fair amount of time with Rand Paul and John Boehner when he was the Speaker of the House and others I won't mention. Some are profoundly amazing and some are not. There's certain people, when you go to the lower levels of government and even at governor, some of them just don't belong there. They're just people that have money and they have influence and power and connections and there, and you know, who knows? But they just don't belong there. I know a lot of people, even people I've gone to school with, that end up in various forms of government. And I know what I know about them, and they're just, in my opinion, they're not equipped. The whole concept of running state government was kind of a governor was a combination of a successful businessman and sheriff, you know, there's a certain thing. Well, this gal, I get her name, but I won't change pages right now. You know, she has none of that. And that stuff's terrifying. It's fine when they're just a mascot or an iconic figurehead just sitting there. But when all of a sudden they've got to make these drastic, impulsive almost, or at least urgent, decisions for the people's well-being, it's politically driven. They look at their political, what do we call them? Friends? And they copy what their fellow believers are doing. And they don't even know. They don't even know what they're doing. They just do it and they love it. That's another bad sign. There's not an act of humility. I mean, a good leader at a high level of authority has got to have humility. And he or she has got to understand the impact on the people. And empathy, folks, I'm going to tell you something. Empathy is something I would love every person out there to really, really research. I mean, understand it. I've mentioned in the past, there's a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, I think about 1933 or 39. Great Christian book, incredible book, life transforming. I know a few of you will probably read it because you think you know, or whatever, or you don't have time. And but this is a book that's worth reading. I'm not a big, throw a book at you guy. I know people that, Solomon said that, the writing of books is endless and it's vain and you need to study God. But you know what? There's some books out there that are critical. Some of the greatest minds in history have studied the appropriate books. Essentially, when you study the work, the writings of Solomon in Ecclesiastes 12, where he says that, The word in Hebrew means fictional writing. Facts are facts. There's no limit to gaining wisdom. It says it's God's nature to hide things and man's nature to find it out. Why God set it up that way, can't tell you. But that's a great book. Empathy is critical to being able to put yourself in other people's shoes. If you find yourself always trying to take the glory, not being willing to laugh at yourself or look or have anything said or done that doesn't put you in an artificially positive light, you're insecure. If you're insecure, you lack empathy for the most part. Insecurity causes self-centeredness. Insecurity basically means you're not secure with who you are in light of the way you're made. You're looking at other people, comparing yourself to other people, or comparing yourself to a standard that probably isn't reasonable. Empathy. Learn about it. It helps. Leaders in this nation, in all nations, but especially our nation, need to be empathetic. So we've got Governor Inslee, who's, you know, he's just another one, but he's been the kingpin of this whole thing, and he's acted as arbitrarily as possible. So the question, you know, we get into this constitutional question, maybe we don't, but we should, of how we define a business as essential or non-essential. That, wouldn't you agree, is another arbitrary decision. Every state has a different definition. A lot of this stuff is going to go to the Supreme Court when this is over, and I pray to God that they get this stuff hammered out and put in concrete so next time people can quote Supreme Court decisions and say, look, here's where your authority stops. Even though this looks like an attempted socialist coup, it may be providentially led another way to protect this nation from the future of what's to come. Just like Trump, final overriding factor of resource. He has absolutely shook the tree. He was going to drain the swamp. What does this look like? It looks like the messiest swamp. Isn't that, if you were draining the swamp, it would be disgustingly ugly. That's what we're seeing here. So the constitutional question is not whether businesses are essential or non-essential, because that's not even possible to define constitutionally. It's too arbitrary. It really boils down to whether or not a business can be operated safely, which is another issue we're going to get into that's going, they said they're the new normal, it's going to be ugly. Folks, we're going to be crazy. We'll eventually relax our standards and then they'll do it again. They'll have us under this most paranoid, strict, you know, you'll think that you're at a military school is the way you'll operate in society. Banning painters, as Matt Shea said, from working in residential construction is arbitrary. As he said, they wear masks and gloves already as part of their work. The same goes for hunting masks and gloves already. Or no, the same goes for hunting and fishing where it can be done safely according to the CDC guidelines, of course. You're away from people. You know, they say people can't go hunting or fishing. These things are just random. But that's the liberals. They probably didn't want people hunting or fishing. Allowing, and then how about on top of it all, abortion clinics are essential. Now, pot shops and liquor stores were essential. People complained about that. But a friend of mine who's in a very profound position in government said to me, can you imagine if we shut down the pot and alcohol stores? It would go crazy, you know, and he theorized and told me exactly what would happen, and he's right. You may not agree, but as I've always said, you cannot legislate morality. Once, if someone needs their liquor and their pot or whatever, you know what? You don't want them losing their cookies out there, busting into your house, or whatever, you know, who knows? I don't want to make a bunch of false accusations, but the thing is, well, let's say this, as a friend said, if they outlawed alcohol right now, you'd be buying bottles of cheap vodka on Craigslist for $250. You might not, but someone might. Okay? It's just silly. Okay? So, as dumb as it sounds, that's a good example of legalizing drugs. Does help. And people are like, what, Kevin? You're crazy. Well, great. I mean, we've been programmed a certain way. People have a right to do what they want to do as long as it doesn't affect their neighbor. I know that differs with a lot of the views because it's not morally accurate. There's all kinds of biblical verses about, you know, what an elder and deacon should be and not given to strong wine and all this stuff. I know all about it and I agree with it. But people that don't obey or follow our belief system in this country have a right to live their lives the way they choose to live them as long as it doesn't mess with us. Okay? Honestly, legalized marijuana, I know I had a gal call me one time when I talked about this. She's like, drugs are bad. I said, yeah, alcohol's way worse. But the thing is, there's prisons full of people because they had pot. Now you can go buy it. Have we seen society turn upside down? No. You know, just saying. Just saying. I mean, I just think that we lose our focus on what a criminal really is. People have pains and hurts and sorrows and needs and, you know, they're complicated. And if they're numbing that and trying to hide behind it, you may not need it. But I'm telling you, being involved with people all over the years, but for the grace but for the grace of God, there go I. That's a real statement. We don't know what people been through, and we have no right to judge that. When we see someone struggling, we have to have Christ's compassion. Who did he go to? He went to the most needy, the most pain, you know, feeling, the hardest part of society. Why? Because they were real. They were hurt. They had hearts that were open and vulnerable and ready to go. They didn't have this pious religious pomposity. And if you're hyper legalistic and you can tell everybody in the church what's wrong with them, you won't tell it to their face, of course, but behind their back you will. And you can tell everybody what's wrong. You're not looking at yourself. And you're living in judgment and you're breaking the church down. That is extremely sick and unhealthy. That is what Christ stood against with the Pharisees. With that spirit, you destroy the humanity of the body of Christ. We are not perfect. We are all broken in different ways. If you're highly legalistic, guess what? You got problems. You're stuffing and ignoring, and you're using that stuff as a diversion. Because take the log out of your own eye before you take the plank or the speck out of the other person's eye. Sorry, speck. And you say, but I don't have a log in my eye. They do. Okay, well, there's a little bit of a spin there. You might want to get the Holy Spirit involved, and they can help you out with that. I can't. So anyway, the abortion clinics, pot shops, liquor stores to be open, but then they order gun stores. Can you say Second Amendment? Churches. Can you say First Amendment? To be closed. That is extremely arbitrary and as illegal as it gets. We have the right to free assembly. I mean, period. And we have a right to bear arms. So they deny you the right to bear arms when we have a, quote, pandemic? The right to acquire arms? Really? Really? There is virtually no scenario that your civil, aka Bill of Rights, aka constitutional rights, can be removed from you in this nation. There is no time that those can be suspended. Now, in this case, we're allowing it, and certain legislators are kind of saying, well, okay, for a certain period of time. You know, there's certain rights. What? The freedom of assembly, yeah. If you had snipers on every corner, everywhere, and every time you assembled, 100% of the time you're going to get shot. I can't think of a scenario where they could justify not being able to acquire guns. Or a time when they could say, well, for this period of time, we get to do illegal search and seizure. So they can go ransack everybody's house during this period. I mean, there is no time. So I disagree even with some of the most conservative legislators. These are sacred rights that are never to be taken away. When the government takes them away, what do you think the scenarios they create are going to look like? The Declaration of Independence. You have England coming down. You broke away. You have no rights. We will crush and destroy you. You know, they had to stand up. Those rights are never. In other words, they're inalienable. Inalienable. That means they cannot be alienated. They cannot be taken away. They cannot be removed. They are synonymous with humanity, with God's creation. You can never remove them. When we're giving these up, it's over. When police are giving out tickets to people who are meeting in churches, obeying crazy laws about social distancing, which we're now getting evidence has all been a scam the whole time. Don't get me wrong. There's layers to these things. Same with 9/11. Did China really release the virus? Yep, probably. Was Bill Gates behind the whole creation and release of it and all the testing kits? Yep. Did they run Event 201 and the pandemic episode or a docuseries and all that before they released it? Yep. This is a political attack, a darn good one, using the Cloward and Piven strategy. So they got the gun stores and churches closed completely arbitrarily. And then, you know, Matt Shea's example, he says, this point's driven home with non-emergency optometrist and dental visits being prohibited. They already follow some of the strictest health protocols so they can be, by very nature, be opened and operated safely. He says, lastly, each citizen in Washington has a duty under Article 1, Section 32 of the state constitution, a frequent recurrence or return to the fundamental principles is essential to the security of individual rights and the perpetuity of free government. In other words, we always go back to the basics. We don't drift away. Constitutional law is not presidential, as in precedential, as in precedent law. We don't do that. It says, as citizens, we have a duty to counter the fake news and return to those fundamental principles. So those standing against the inconsistent, nonsensical, and asinine policies of Government Inslee are obeying the Constitution. Government Inslee, or Governor Inslee, is currently not. And I'm out of time. If we can help you out, get yourself financially sound where you belong, give us a call, 509-444-0044. Take care. God bless. Have a great night. Thanks. Bye-bye.